The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob Frantz on AM 1420, The Answer.
Welcome indeed. It is Always Right Radio on a Wednesday, and a great Wednesday it is. 7 minutes after 9 o'clock on this 20th morning of the third month in the year of our Lord 2024. And now we have some of the battle lines that have been drawn. We got decisions yesterday from the voters of the state of Ohio. It is a fantastic thing. I think they did the right thing in a lot of races, not in all of the races. But in a lot of the races, I think they did the right thing. We now know who is going to try to take out Sherrod Brown in November and remove him finally from the stain that he is on the United States Senate. He is a three-term Democrat senator from what is now a reliably red state that needs to be bounced out of Washington, D.C. And the reality is the American people the people of Ohio, I should say, had a very, very tough time deciding from three candidates. It was a close race. It lasted, obviously many months of twists and turns with former candidate, but yes, current Secretary of State Frank LaRose leading in the very early going. Bernie Moreno trailing considerably, as well as Matt Dolan. Then an endorsement from Donald Trump came in, and that endorsement carried a lot of weight as it propelled Bernie Moreno into a pretty sizable lead in the middle of this thing. Then just 2 weeks ago, we found out that Bernie Moreno's lead had gone away, and the man who had been in a distant third, Matt Dolan, had moved up to first place in the poll by 3 points over Moreno, and by almost 10 over Frank LaRose. So we thought, how is this thing going to play out? Is this what the people of the state of Ohio are going to decide? And then, of course, we got the latest poll, which was the day before the election, on Monday. We found out on Monday, closing the door on the polling was a number from the Emerson College survey that said Bernie Moreno has surged past Matt Dolan and was in a very, very comfortable lead as we headed into the opening of the polls on Tuesday. Which one was going to be right? Nobody knew. Now we know. Last night, Bernie Moreno won the GOP nomination. He is going to face Sherrod Brown. He is the Trump-backed candidate, backed by America First people all up and down the conservative slate, both in-state and out of the state. Notice I said conservative slate, not Republican slate, because some of the Republicans who are not conservative in this state had backed Mr. Dolan. That would include Governor DeWine. That would include former Senator Rob Portman. But the people, the voters, the Republican and conservative voters of the state of Ohio said, no, we kind of like the choice of the former President Donald Trump. We kind of like the choice of Senator J.D. Vance. We kind of like the choice of Congressman Jim Jordan. These are all within the state. We kind of like the choice of people like Senator Ted Cruz. We like the choice of Governor Kristi Noem. We like the choice of gubernatorial candidate, or excuse me, now Senate candidate, Carrie Lake. And so many of the other conservative voices who have said Bernie Moreno is the man to get Sherrod Brown out of Washington, D.C. So that happened yesterday. We have all kinds of election results to talk about this morning. We're going to get into all of it after we do our pledge. Patriots, go ahead and stand if you would. Put your hand on your heart and join us for this pledge. It is an important day as we look back at what happened yesterday and what does that portend for the several months to come as we get ready for the Super Bowl of Survival, which is what this country faces in November. So put your hand on your heart and join us for this. If you are a supporter of the radical left, if you are a supporter of surrendering American sovereignty, then you are obviously not a supporter of the country. Don't pretend. Make sure that we can identify you as the Marxist dog that you are. Go ahead and take a knee next to the others. For the rest of us,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, 12 minutes after 9 o'clock, we're going to do something new now. I literally have never done this. This is something I've been working on for a while now, and we are going to finally debut. This is going to be the way we start our show from now on, provided this works, but let's give this a shot here.
It's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
Want to run them down as best we can.
Number 1.
Ohio Republicans did make that clear decision yesterday. Bernie Moreno will be the GOP nominee in the November Senate battle against radical leftist Senator Sherrod Brown. Brown has begun the attacks on Moreno already.
My opponent has always looked out for himself. He's even said he's not going to work with people whom he disagrees with in Washington, which means he's not fighting for Ohio. He's not representing Ohio. And I think the best example of that is even though Ohio strongly, decisively, importantly passed abortion rights constitutional amendment by 13 points last fall, my opponent continues to say that we should have a national abortion ban. No exceptions for rape, no exceptions for life of the mother.
Moreno is ardently pro-life. Sherrod Brown is right about that. It might be about the only thing that he gets right in this entire campaign. But the battle is now underway. What do you say we get to?
Number 2.
House hearings are going to be held this morning to investigate the Biden family business dealings with foreign companies in foreign adversarial nations that involved providing access to the Obama White House by way of then Vice President Joe Biden. Many of Hunter Biden's closest allies during that time are going to be testifying against him today in these hearings. Congressman Jim Jordan responded to Hunter Biden's claim that the evidence against Biden is baseless.
We got millions of dollars from foreign entities flowing through 20 different companies for what? What was the service? What were they selling? What were they offering? And Devin Archer, Hunter Biden's business partner, told us in his deposition it was for access to the brands, and the brand was Joe Biden. The brand who played rounds of golf, took phone calls and meetings, attended lunches and dinners with Hunter Biden and his business associates. The brand who conditioned $1 billion of American tax money on the firing of the prosecutor who was investigating the company Hunter Biden sat on the board of and was receiving $1 million a year. That's what we're talking about here.
Going to be a fiery hearing today in the Oversight Committee. No question about that. Let's go to
number 3.
Democrats and left-wing media are slamming President Trump for anti-Semitic comments, what they declare to be anti-Semitic comments. They say that President Trump, who declared during an interview with Sebastian Gorka that American Jews who vote for Democrats should be ashamed of themselves. They say that that is an example of anti-Semitism.
But I really believe they hate Israel, and they also see a lot of votes. Don't forget, when you see those Palestinian marches, even I'm amazed at how many people are in those marches. And guys like Schumer see that. And to him, it's votes. I think it's votes more than anything else, because he was always pro-Israel. He's very anti-Israel. Now, any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion. They hate everything about Israel, and they should be ashamed of themselves.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer again declared
today by addressing the reprehensible and dangerous comments made yesterday by former President Trump. The former president's comments were utterly disgusting and a textbook example of the kind of anti-Semitism facing Jews, pushing the dangerous anti-Semitism trope of dual loyalty.
Of course, there is no dual loyalty. They are loyal to Democrats, first and foremost, no matter how much damage Democrats do to Israel, to their homeland, to their ancient homeland. That is the reality of it. We'll have more on that. Ohio Senator J.D. Vance and Indiana U.S. Representative Jim Banks have introduced a bill that would prohibit universities that receive federal funding from hiring illegal aliens. The bill is entitled the College Employment Accountability Act, which specifically amends... Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to tell you that.
Number four.
Yeah. It specifically amends the Higher Education Act of 1965 to prohibit an institution of higher education that employs unauthorized aliens from receiving any funds from federal student assistance or federal institutional aid. That's important. Very important, because not enough people are paying attention to how much money it is costing us as taxpayers to employ these people, to provide resources for these people, and yes, to educate these people as well. That's a huge one by Senator Vance.
Number five.
More news on the former president. President Trump is now just days away from possibly having his real estate confiscated by New York Attorney General Letitia James. You know, the one who pledged when she was running for AG to get that man. I'll find something. We're going to sue him and we're going to get him. It's unbelievable. This is lawfare at its worst. Anyway, unless he comes up with $454 million in cash to appeal the insane judgment against him for allegedly overvaluing his properties. Investment banker Kevin O'Leary calls the attack on Trump an attack on all of us.
The message about the American brand. You think about America, the reason this is the number one economy on earth is that we have laws and we have due process and we have property rights. It attracts foreign capital from all around the world. All of that is being shaken to the core here. The concept of seizing assets in 30 days on a bond number that's never been issued. No insurance bond company's ever issued anything near this. So there was no chance it was going to happen. And only giving 30 days notice and time, that's a really bad message. And I think New Yorkers should think well past Trump. Whether he's president or not, or whether this attorney general is gone in 4 years or not, it's irrelevant. This is case setting against the American brand. The most stable country on earth, anywhere, to put capital to work over a long period of time, particularly in real estate, is the United States of America. This is an assault on what we believe to be core. And I find it extraordinary. I think it's very troubling. It has absolutely nothing to do with Donald Trump at this point, in my view, and it is completely bipartisan. This is an attack on America.
An attack on America, indeed. Let's go to
number six.
The Supreme Court ruled 6-3 yesterday afternoon that Texas law enforcement officials do have the legal authority to enforce immigration law. They can arrest, detain, and deport illegal immigrants. The ruling, which is an injunction, allows Texas to enforce SB 4, a local law passed in the Lone Star State, until the case receives a full ruling from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. It's a temporary win, but it's a huge win for the state of Texas and for anybody and everybody that believes in American sovereignty and is disgusted by the Biden administration's attempt to stop Texas from doing what they themselves should be doing, which is protecting our border.
Number seven.
Representative Corey Mills of Florida announced yesterday he has successfully evacuated personally another group of Americans stranded in Haiti, which has descended into anarchy. In a statement on Twitter, Mills said he and his team rescued 13 Americans, a move that comes after he evacuated 10 other Americans last week who worked at an orphanage in the capital of Port-au-Prince. Haiti is an absolute war zone right now, being overrun by and being run by warlords and gang members. Americans, roughly 1,000 of them, continue to be stuck in Florida. Biden has said basically we're not doing much about it. So Representative Corey Mills, a Republican in Florida, decided to act. That's outstanding.
Number eight.
Brian Schwab, Democratic Attorney General in Washington, D.C., finally did something right. Dropped the charges against the Gold Star father, Steve Nikku, who disrupted Congress during Biden's State of the Union scream earlier this month. Nikku is the father of Kareem Nikku, who was killed during the Biden administration's botched withdrawal from Afghanistan in 2021. Nikku screamed out in support of his son and the others who died thanks to Joe Biden's absolute ineptitude. He had been charged with a number of things. Yesterday, those charges were dropped. So finally, some good news there. And
number nine.
American drivers, you, me, we're paying 45% more now to fuel our daily commute since Joe Biden got to the White House. Not 4.5%, 45%, according to AAA data this week. The national average gas price on Monday was $3.46 a gallon, according to AAA, up about 20 cents from last month. When Biden assumed office, the national average was $2.38 a gallon, more than a dollar less than the current price and 45% of an increase since former President Donald J. Trump left office. Thank you so much for that, Democrats. Thank you for what you have brought us.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, there you go. I think we pulled it off. I wasn't exactly sure how that would go, but that's what we're going to work on. I want to try to bring you as much of the news at the top of the show every day as I can. These are topics we will be talking about throughout the program. At least that's the goal here. That's the intent of what we're trying to do with the monologue now. Rather than monologuing on one particular subject, which may change day to day, who knows, but that is going to be the goal. So those are the top news stories that we are going to be getting into. In about 15 minutes, we're going to start by reacting to the decision yesterday by Ohio Republicans to choose Bernie Moreno over Frank LaRose and Matt Dolan to be the contender to Sherrod Brown's throne. And it kind of feels like he has been on that throne. It does seem almost like it's entitled to him because this is his fourth run for that seat. What Sherrod Brown has done through three terms and 18 years to deserve to stay in Washington in the United States Senate is a mystery. I mean, literally, I have no earthly idea what accomplishments he can point to that would justify giving him that second and that third and now asking for a fourth term. If somebody can explain it to me, I would love to hear it. But I really do not believe there's anything there to explain. Bernie Moreno has got to take him out. So I want to say congratulations this morning to Bernie Moreno. I do think that the people of Ohio, the Republican voters of Ohio, made the right decision. I was glad to see that if there was a crossover on the open primary system or in the open primary system that Ohio continues to foolishly support, and I really, really hope at some point somebody in the General Assembly is going to push for a bill that would close Ohio primaries and make sure you have to be a registered Republican to vote in a Republican primary for at least one or two cycles. And same thing for Democrats. I really, really hope that's the case. But if there was crossover yesterday, it did not seem to have much of an impact because Bernie Moreno won going away. And he is the one that now we have to help push to retire Sherrod Brown. And by the way, I want to say this too. If Matt Dolan had won this, I would not have been as enthusiastic about his chances. I would not have been as enthusiastic about the job that he might do in Washington, D.C., because I do not believe him to be a true hardcore conservative. I do believe him to be more of a moderate, even if he is center-right. I think the emphasis is more on center and less on right when it comes to Matt Dolan. And so, and I'm not trying to ignore Frank LaRose, by the way. I think there are a lot of great things about that guy. I do think that the Republican voters of Ohio got this right. But had it been Dolan, who was the second place finisher in this and probably the biggest threat, I would be this morning congratulating him and saying we have to retire Sherrod Brown. I would be just as passionate about this need to get rid of Sherrod Brown if it was Matt Dolan. It's not. It's somebody who I believe to be more truly committed to conservative principles, the America First agenda, which, again, far, far surpasses just one man. It doesn't mean just the Trump agenda. The America First agenda is much, much larger, but President Trump is its driver. He is the man in charge of it, at the wheel. And that agenda is one that I believe in. And I believe Bernie Moreno, much more than the other two guys, is emblematic of that. And so I think we should be very excited about the way this turned out last night, and we should be all rowing the boat in the same direction. And I did see some nice comments from Frank LaRose yesterday, last night, in a concession, essentially. He said he's going to get on board. Bernie Moreno said some nice things about his two opponents, and that we're going to unify the Ohio Republican effort against Sherrod Brown, and that is exactly what has to happen. So coming up in less than 10 minutes now, we're going to talk to Jack Windsor, our friend from the Ohio Press Network, who was up watching the returns last night, analyzing them. He was talking to me a little bit. We were talking to a lot of other people. So we're going to analyze the results, not just of that Senate race, but some of the House races, some of the State Central Committee races, and yes, the Blue 22 races in the Ohio General Assembly. Jack Windsor will be joining us. We're going to talk to Shannon Burns at the top of the next hour from the Strongsville GOP. So we've got a lot of Ohio politics to talk about. Stay here. It's Always Right Radio on AM 1420 The Answer. Okay, 9:40 now. I think we've got all of the I's dotted and the T's crossed. Let's see if we can come back in here and get Jack Windsor on the line with us from the Ohio Press Network to react to and respond and analyze yesterday's Ohio primary votes. Jack, thank you for sticking with us. We appreciate it, man. How are you?
Hey, Bob. Super fantastic. Just honored to be with you this morning. Thanks for choosing me.
A lot of ground to cover here. Not probably so much on the Senate race, because I did that most of that in my open. But go ahead and give me your reaction. Did you think it would be as big of a gap as it was, ended up being, for Bernie Moreno over Matt Dolan and Frank LaRose?
No, I didn't. I did not have Bernie Moreno pulling 50% of the vote, 50.5% in a three-way race. Didn't have it on my bingo card, Bob. But what's really interesting is when you look at, he won by 17.5. Marin won by 18. Both of those guys were Trump endorsed. So for the people who were wondering, does Donald Trump's endorsement still matter? I think it does. Now, one could argue, well, yeah, but die had already been cast with Marin. Maybe that's why he jumped in. Okay. But I'm just saying both of those guys won by about 18%. What I'll add in that race is that you saw down the stretch, dirty politics. You saw things crop up that may be true, probably aren't true. But what I think was too much to overcome for Matt Dolan are things like the Equality Act, gun legislation, being the guy that handles the budget in the Senate for a couple of cycles, and the state budget has grown. To me, that race was a resounding, we do not approve of this moderate Mitt Romney, George Bush, Republican policy, we're going in a different direction.
I think that's well said. There is a split in the type of Republican Party that holds sway in the state of Ohio. And clearly, you know, the last two presidential cycles with Trump winning by 8 points, and the sweeping of statewide races and so forth with conservatives, overwhelmingly, not all of them, not to a man or woman, but overwhelmingly, excuse me, conservative Republicans rather than center-right or rhino Republicans. I think there is a shift, and that old guard is gone. So Bernie Moreno is the standard bearer. Already, Sherrod Brown is on the attack. I played a clip of him this morning. He was on MSNBC bashing Moreno and talking about his radical views of pushing for a federal abortion ban. What is your early handicap between Moreno and Brown, Jack Windsor?
Well, I understand a lot of, well, actually some conservatives thought Bernie Moreno may not be the toughest, the best candidate. You know, maybe a Matt Dolan who can pull some moderate votes. Bernie Moreno just won by almost 18 points. So if I'm Sherrod Brown, I'm going to start doing the math. There's going to be heavy turnout. Bob, you and I have talked about this. Of course, Sherrod Brown is on the offensive talking about abortion because the left has two talking points. Orange man bad, which nobody in the state of Ohio is buying right now, and abortion. And by the way, Ohio already voted on what's going on with respect to abortion. I think I've said this for a while. The easy position now in a general election, if you're a Republican running for federal office, is That decision has been made. The Supreme Court got it right. It's a state right issue. Next question. Like, I don't know what Sherrod's going to run on. Now, there are some Trump voters. We've talked about this. I know Shannon will talk about it probably at some point. But when you get into the Mahoning Valley, there could be a split, right? The blue-collar auto worker union guy who's going to vote for Trump and maybe was born and reared and told that Sherrod Brown, you know, gets up and works for the working man. Yeah, I just don't know. Sherrod's going to have his hands full. Let me just put it that way. Although Bernie is too, Brown has one of the most, I guess you would call it, durable brands in Ohio politics. But Bob, this is not 2018. This is 2024. And I think Republican voters genuinely feel like this is their last stand. This is it. Either you elect a Republican president, you get an America First policy guy in the Senate, or we're done. And I think the stakes are a lot higher, and I think Sherrod Brown has an uphill battle.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing a lot of people have pointed out, and I think you did too in one of our previous conversations, is Sherrod Brown has never faced an opponent with Donald Trump on the ticket. That matters because of everything that we've talked about. The America First agenda, you know, Ohio has gone solidly for Trump 8-plus points in each of the last two elections, and that's going to lead to an awful lot of people coming out to vote for him, particularly with the lawfare and the attempt to lock him up and everything else. There is such a massive, massive pushback against what the left is doing. There's going to be a huge Republican turnout for Trump in Ohio, and every one of those voters that goes down ballot and sees the name Bernie Moreno and checks it, that's something that Sherrod Brown has never had to face before. There's never been a time that he's been up for election where there's been a Trump force of nature on that ballot, or on that ticket, I should say, or on that ballot that could impact his job as much as this one will. So, Jack, let's move to some other races. Obviously, there was a big Senate race, or excuse me, House race, Kevin Coughlin and Chris Banweg. That one got a little contentious as well, more than I wanted to. I had both those guys in my studio, and we had a what I thought was a fairly civil debate and some support for the party here. But Kevin Coughlin, who is a proven vote-getter, Chris Banweg is a newcomer, so he's the winner there. Give me your thoughts on that, and then I'm going to ask you to take this in whatever direction you want when it comes to the Blue 22 results.
Yeah, you know, the Banweg race, I genuinely thought that was going to turn out differently. I just thought that there might have been some momentum there, and I kind of misread the tea leaves on that one. But since we're talking about,
did you think Banweg would win? Because I thought it would be closer. I didn't know if I thought he would win, but I thought it would be a lot closer.
That was on my upset card. That was one that I thought was going to be an upset. I missed that one. I thought Marin would win. I didn't think Marin would win by 18, but Marin won. I thought Stoltz had a shot in House District 6, and he came up about 8 points short, which that's a tough one because regardless of he's a conservative, he's a proven policy conservative, and I was hopeful that Reggie would. He did well. I mean, you know, you're within 8 points. But that was one that I was watching closely. Bob, here's the direction I want to take it in. I think it might have been Obama who bragged, elections have consequences. Well, Bob, sometimes the elections.
Hey, Jack, before you continue with that, I just want to let you know and let everybody else know that unfortunately we are all slaves to the EAS emergency alert system. So we're going to have an EAS test that is scheduled for coming up in the next several minutes. They're never on time, so I don't know if it's going to be in 1 minute or 9 minutes from now. I really don't. So just be prepared to pause for that, and then we'll pick it up from there. But please continue.
Wonderful. Thank you for that notice. Sometimes, Bob, the elections are the consequences. I know you and I both were watching several state house races that involved the Blue 22. And one of them, I think, was actually maybe a wild card. Maybe it was under the radar. And that is Mike Davila and Gordon Short right there close to your area in District 17. Jason Stevens was, his team was out knocking doors with Gordon Short. Happy to report Mike Davila won that race last night. Gordon Short was backed by Tom Patton of Blue 22. He was endorsed by Matt Dolan. And some people see that one as an upset. I know Mike Davila. I don't think it's an upset. I think he ran a hell of a campaign. So that's a win for the anti-Blue 22. Ty Matthews crushed John Cross. And I mean crushed John Cross. And, Bob, it couldn't happen to a better person. John Cross is a guy who thinks that school choice is a bad decision. John Cross is a guy who looks at homeschoolers and says, you're alt-right Christian wackos, and the dude got it handed to him, and I'm glad. Jody Salvo.
And he was one of the 22. Most arrogant, if I may. John Cross was one of the most arrogant and belligerent members of the Blue 22 who stabbed Ohio Republicans in the back by turning away from his oath, when Maron won the caucus vote. A lot of them did so and were kind of quiet about it. A lot of them trumpeted it and said, kiss my butt. I'll do what I want. And John Cross was in that camp. He took no criticism from anybody. He wouldn't accept interviews from guys like me. I don't know if you had a chance to talk to him very often, but he was one of the most arrogant guys about what he did and what they did, and the fact that he got trounced by a primary challenger in Ty Matthews, it really, really feels good. But go ahead.
Dennis Prager says it. Don't let the praise go to your head. That way the criticisms don't go to your heart. When it comes to victories, you know, I kind of take a similar tack, but I'll tell you a quick boring story about John Cross. I covered the Blue 22 before it happened. I saw that it was happening. I did a pre-report on it. After it happened, I did the post-mortem, and we were right. You and I had a podcast on it. We were right. John Cross had the gall to go out somewhere in his district and say, well, Jack Windsor doesn't know what he's talking about. He's fake news. He makes stuff up. So I called John Cross. And I said, John, I have a recording of what you said last night. I'd like to discuss that with you because my report on your betrayal is accurate. Can we talk? Click, hung up on me. John Cross is bombastic. He's arrogant. But when the rubber meets the road, he's the doughboy bull.
All right. So as expected, there was the EAS test. So Jack Windsor, go ahead and pick it up from there.
Yeah. So if we're tracking here, that's Davila. That's Matthews over Cross. Jody Salvo, maybe one of the better candidates going against Blue 22 members. Upset Brett Hudson-Hillier in Tuscarora's County area. Diane Mullins took down Sarah Carruthers last night. And Heidi Workman with a workman-like win over Gail Pavliga. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 races. We were told that the Blue 22 would have to lose 3 or 4. They lost 5. And then when you look at this race, Mark Heiner over Scott Pullins. Pullins was endorsed by Stevens. So now you're up in the 6 category. So anywhere
did you count? Did you count? I'm sorry. Did you count Davila over Short as one of those? Because Short obviously was not in. He's was running for the patent seat. Was that one of
them? He was running for the. Yes, he was running for the patent seat, endorsed by Patton, endorsed by Dolan, and had Stevens folks knocking doors and working for him there. So he was a Blue 22 capture. He was going to be a recapture. Davila is not. I've talked at length to him.
No, I know so that. I know that about Mike Davila. Yeah. I had him on as well, and he's a good guy, and he was absolutely the right choice in that race, and I'm glad to see that it was made. I just didn't know if we were counting. The reason I was really interested in the number here, Jack, and you were getting 5 or 6, is because when I spoke with Jerry Serino, state senator, about this just a couple of weeks ago, about how he saw this whole thing playing, he said, you know, there's 17 of them that are running for reelection. He said he sees perhaps 6 that could actually flip, have primary challengers boot existing Blue 22 members, which will be enough when Matt Huffman comes over from the Senate side to the House and is almost a foregone conclusion that he's going to be a nominee for Speaker, enough for him to get that and to essentially erase the impact of the Blue 22. That was the way it was described to me. Go ahead.
Yes. My understanding was if it was 3 or 4, that was possible. At 6, I think it's totally possible. So we're at 5, maybe on the cusp of 6. There were some open seat races, Jack Daniels, Kelly Dieter, Levi Dean. Of course, that Mark Heiner one I kind of threw in there as maybe a 5 or a 6. So those could essentially go either way. I would suspect that they're probably leaning more toward the conservative cause. But there are a couple factors here, Bob. Number one, Matt Huffman won his race. Obviously, he was unopposed. He's going to win the general. He is a savvy strategist, and I think it will be hard for Stevens to upend him the way that he pulled it off with Derek Maron. And I would predict that Jason Stevens is in trouble because of that, plus 2 other reasons. Bob, Jason Stevens just absconded with over $3 million of Ohio Republican money, and he spent it on races that frankly, you and I know if he hadn't spent it on Haraz Gambari, if he hadn't spent it on Tracy Richardson, they probably would have lost those races. And I'm not going to steal the thunder of somebody you're going to talk to later, but I think that Jason Stevens et al. Are shocked today that they lost as many as they did. And then the final thing is, if you look at somebody like, say, I don't know, Sharon Ray, or you look at somebody like Gene Schmidt, do these people really want to do this again? Do they really want to push that button for Jason Stevens and have their political careers and their butts on the hot seat again? Elections sometimes are the consequences, Bob. And I think that conservatives throughout the state of Ohio spoke loud and clear last night. The press tried to dismiss it. Oh, there's this endless squabble in the party, and it's this small faction, and they're making a big deal. No, no, people are angry. It's unforgivable. These people lied. They're turncoats. The John Crosses of the world made fun of the conservative faction of the party, and his butt is unemployed today as a result. So it's a huge win, at least at the state lawmaker level, for the conservative movement last night.
Well, I completely concur. And to your question about, do you think some of these people that survived yesterday are going to want to go through this again when their term is up again? And I think the answer is going to be no for the overwhelming majority of them, because that's what Senator Schirino and I talked about. The fact that if five or six of these people lose their seats now to primary challengers because of what they did in supporting Stevens, it's going to send a message to the rest of them. Okay, that little experiment of siding with the Democrats in order to choose Speaker Stevens is going to, it cost these people their careers, and it could cost me next. They're going to come back on board. They're going to probably support Matt Huffman. And like I said, that movement, if you will, of the Republican Party, that Rhino portion of the General Assembly, will probably shut itself down.
Yeah, I think that's well said. Yeah, well, you know, the people spoke, Bob. They really did. And when you think about it, think about the money that Jason Stevens spent. Think about the help that he's had in the press. By the way, what's been really gross is watching on social media over the past few weeks, people who are aligned with the Ohio Communist Journal, people who are progressives, are throwing in for Jason Stevens. And you go, that's what you're up against. You've got a guy who's more concerned about power and money than he is principle. Ohioans are not going to stand for it, Bob.
Yeah, well, it's all about the unions. You know, Jason is owned by the unions. That's just the reality of it as far as I can see it. And a lot of those other people who supported him. Gordon Ashort had the same exact union support. Obviously,
yep.
That's why he had Tom Patton support and why he had Dolan support and so forth. So we kind of see how all of that played out. So will five or six of those primary winners who took out Blue 22 members lead to a massive sea change in the General Assembly and in the Ohio House? We can only hope so. And hopefully that message was sent. Jack Winsler, founder and editor-in-chief of the Ohio Press Network, working very, very hard on that with the Ohio Press Network. Make sure you subscribe to that to see the latest news on Ohio politics and beyond. Jack Winsler, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Have a great day, man.
You got it. 9:58. We'll take a timeout here. On the other side, more Ohio reaction. Shannon Burns is going to join us from Strongsville GOP. I'm looking forward to that conversation. Then, and of course, your conversations. 216-901-0945 or 888-281-1110. It's Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The Answer. Here's your host, Bob France.
All right, hour number two is underway on the morning after primary day 2024 style. Thanks for being with us. It is the 20th morning of the third month in the year of our Lord 2024. We have some of the races set now, including obviously the biggest one, the Senate race, as Bernie Moreno will carry the banner for conservatism into a November fight against Sherrod Brown for radicalism. I don't think that's unfair. A lot of interesting developments, five or six different Blue 22 members lost their spots yesterday. That's a huge statement by the conservative voters in the Republican Party in the state of Ohio. And hopefully it's a message to those that survived it you don't want to play that game again, do you? You saw what just happened. Hopefully that will steer them on the right track when leadership for the next General Assembly comes up. That was a big, big part of what yesterday was all about. Let's welcome Shannon Burns back to our program. Shannon Burns, who is, heads up Strongsville GOP, joining us on AM 1420, The Answer, also a member of the State Central Committee. Big day yesterday, Shannon Burns. First of all, good morning and welcome. Good to have you back. How are you?
Good morning, and I'm a little bit little tired, but really happy. What, I don't even know where to start. This is such a great night.
Well, so tell me what makes you most happy. That's where we'll start.
Well, I mean, clearly Bernie's decisive victory, that was a, I think it's really a defining moment for the state, because now we're seeing a, you know, a Matt Dolan type candidate recognizing that there is no pathway to victory in Ohio, with that type of a, profile, right? The Romney Republicans lost in a terrible way, yesterday in Ohio. And I think you're finally going to start to see the alignment shift that's necessary in Ohio. And I think that's really, believe it or not, I think it's the donor community recognizing that, especially like the transactional donors, recognizing that no longer can they back a Romney type. They have to back conservatives, which I think is going to be good for this country, and it's going to be good for our state. So, you know, that by far, I think, is the most interesting win of the night last night.
What does the margin tell you, Shannon, about not just that race and as you say, the Romney style Republicans, you know, it held sway for a very long time in this country and in this state, and it was all smacked down pretty decisively yesterday. But not just about that, but I'm curious what the margin tells you about polling. We always go by the polls. You know, even though we have seen the polls be wrong time and time again, the most notable being in 2016 when Hillary Clinton was destroying Donald Trump in all the polls and then lost. You know, this was Matt Dolan by three as little as a week and a half ago. And then, of course, we got an update from Emerson on Monday, which showed Bernie Moreno surging ahead. But I just kind of wonder how much stock we can put in polls going forward, because even the best case scenario did not have Bernie Moreno getting over 50% of the votes.
Sure. Yeah, that's well. I think there's a couple things that we saw happen since Saturday in Ohio. First, you saw the undecideds break heavily for Bernie. I think you also saw people that were paying attention recognize that Frank LaRose had no opportunity, no pathway to victory, and you saw a lot of Frank LaRose voters moving to Bernie as well. So, I don't know that I'm at a point where I'm not willing to look at the polls in this scenario. We saw the movement. It happened, right? Emerson had Matt up by 3 points and then Bernie up by eight over that period of time. Mm-hmm. Trump comes into the state. Those undecideds pay attention and moved right then. And I think we saw it in 22, right? When he endorsed J.D. Vance, J.D. Vance went from fifth place to first place overnight. And we saw that happen once already. I think we've seen it happen a second time.
So you think just the Dayton rally on Saturday was enough to move that needle from down three to what did it end up, 50 to 30, 33 or something? Was it a 17-point margin?
That's right. And he ended up, 14% is what he won by?
Yeah.
I do.
14-point margin. Yeah.
And I don't think that it's just the rally. I mean, the rally was the boiling point. Mm-hmm. You've got what happened was, I think it became a Trump versus non-Trump in Ohio. I really do think that's sort of how this ended up shaking out and why the margin moved so much at the end. You had really high undecideds being less than a week out. That was extraordinarily high for the amount of money that was being spent. And I think that just recognize it's sort of the nasty, you know, ridiculous, you know, obviously the Hail Mary pass that Dolan threw at the end trying to take down Bernie. And clearly the voters didn't buy it. They saw right past it. They saw what the media was doing to Bernie as well. I mean, AP is despicable. Right? They're no better than, they're worse than CNN now, right? To see they had all of the facts proven that hit piece that they wrote was false, and yet they still go out and print it. That's, you know, it's absolutely ridiculous that we are in a world where no media is trustworthy at all. They literally knew they were printing a fake story and did it to try to help Dolan. So, you know, the voters saw past it, and I just think that the undecideds just broke heavily for Bernie, and a lot of Frank voters moved over to Bernie as well.
Shannon, let's get to some of the other things that made you very pleased this morning. You mentioned that was number one. I know you had a certain feeling about the Mike Davila-Gordon short race, too.
Sure. Yeah, that was, I think, a pretty clear decision for most voters that paid attention. Glad to see that the voters in Southwest Cuyahoga County in the 17th House District saw fit to move Mike Davila on to the general. Clearly, he's a brilliant guy. He's a great conservative. He's shown great leadership in the past, and I think he's going to lead for Northeast Ohio down in Columbus again for us. So that was, a very exciting win for us to win by 3 points when the race probably got outspent 2-1 at least there. There's a lot of Tom Patton money in there and probably Jason Stevens money as well. So it was a great victory for the conservative cause in right here in Cleveland. So it was, obviously Bernie was right here in Cleveland. Mike Davila is one more race. And I think that was sort of one of the shadow Blue 22 races, really, that people weren't putting a lot of stock in the fact that Stevens was helping up in this race so much.
Yeah, really, that's big. I was talking to Jack Windsor about that, too, and that's a good way to say it, kind of a shadow Blue 22 race, because obviously Tom Patton was one of them, but he's, this was his hand-picked guy in Gordon Short, so he got defeated there. So you can kind of count him among, and Jack and I were just running through the list of some of the other Blue 22s who were defeated, so there was probably five others. What do you think that says about the state of the GOP in the House?
Well, first thing, all of the people that were saying that no one cared about the Blue 22, they were foolish. And they're clearly, the voters were informed. They understood what happened. They understood that that's something that can never happen again. And they spoke decisively. And you had some longtime popular elected officials that were taken out last night because of that move that they made. And I don't think there'll be a case where that happens again. And it's amazing. And I got to say, one thing that, not many people are talking about, but I think the real winner last night in that was this group Make Liberty Win. By my count, I think that, they looks like they played in 15 races around the state at least, or 12, something like that. And it looks like they won 8 or so. That's for an outside group to come in and really try to build a conservative Liberty caucus in Ohio and be that successful in one cycle is really impressive.
Yeah, I think so too. That is an important thing. What do you anticipate now with Matt Huffman winning? Obviously, he was unopposed, so he was going to go over there anyway, and he's going to win in November. Is it a foregone conclusion, do you believe, that, now that we know those who felt like that the Blue 22 is no big deal, we're wrong, as you just pointed out. Mm-hmm. Is it a foregone conclusion that Jason Stevens' time is up after November?
Foregone conclusion, no. I mean, I think the numbers are so tight right now that he could try to make this move again. I just don't think that his, his flock are going to have the guts to go against the voters again, seeing what just happened to their colleagues. I think it's really difficult for him to do that. So I think it's pretty clear sailing for Matt Huffman. I mean, I don't know Matt Huffman very well, but what I've met him and talked to him, that he's a great conservative. I think he'd be a great leader for Ohio. We've got a lot of things we need to fix in this state, and Jason Stevens is standing in the way of fixing all of that. So I just don't see a pathway for him at this point. The numbers are too upside down because, we're talking about the Blue 22, but there's also all of the open seats, and most of those went our way as well. So I don't think he really had a good night at all last night, even though he had, what I believe unethically at least and maybe illegally spent that $3 million from the ORA funds.
I was just going to ask you, how much he ended up spending of that. These are Republican dollars for the party, and he literally chose to play favorites and spend a bunch of money attacking those who were primarying some of his biggest supporters that got him that gavel. I mean, this is why we don't like, Democrat-style politics. When Republicans practice Democrat-style politics, it's worse than when Democrats do it, because we're supposed to be above that. And that's exactly what this looks like, and it's exactly what it smells like. He's out there, rewarding his supporters for partnering with those very same Democrats, including one who held the Bible for him as he was sworn in as the Speaker. This kind of thing, I feel like Ohio is a much deeper red state than perhaps is represented by the current makeup in the General Assembly.
Significant change takes a while. We're not going to get it overnight, and we're seeing every single cycle victories that are improving on all points of view, right? We're looking at a senator now, two senators, hopefully, which I have strong belief that Bernie will win decisively in November. But we'll have two senators that are great conservatives. We obviously have our state house that is now a supermajority, but not acting like it. And I think we're going to be back on track to having a supermajority that acts like it next year. So that's,
yeah, I mean when I say a deeper red? I mean, it's like red state, yeah. But it's more like a hot pink. It's kind of a very pastel-y type of red, if there is such a thing. And that's not good enough, obviously. It's not good enough. When you have a supermajority and we're only getting done one-tenth of the things that ought to be gotten done that are truly reflective of conservative values, of constitutional values, which is exactly what the Republican Party is supposed to stand for, we're getting one-tenth of that done. And it's because of the obstruction and because of the refusal of people like Stevens and some of his supporters to do what the people of Ohio voted for him to do. We can be a much deeper red, a much more conservative and constitutional red than we are with this makeup.
Well, before we talk about my other two fun wins from last night that I want to share, but I want to touch on this topic you just said, because the pathway for us to be a deeper red state, a state that actually executes conservative policy. You know, for instance, I think you and I talked about this. We've got a budget in the state of Ohio that, $96 billion.
Yeah.
Compared to Florida's budget, $110 billion. Florida has twice as many people as us. We spend almost twice as much per resident in Ohio that Florida does. And that's unreal. We need to have conservatives in space that are cutting our spending and our taxes along with it. Before you go on
from that point, Shannon, I agree with you. We need to cut that. That's insane that we spend almost the same amount of money for half of the number of people. I agree with you on cutting it. But if you are going to spend that much money, then doggone it, give me Florida style results. Florida is the deep red that I envy. Florida, under DeSantis' leadership, their legislature, their state school board, they're delivering the things that we expect to be delivered here by our Republican supermajorities. We're just not getting it.
That's right. Well, I think the only way we're going to ultimately get there is by closing our primary. The idea that Democrats can come in and mess with our primaries consistently, in 22, at least 214,000 Democrats came over and voted in the governor's race. It probably could have been as much as 243,000. We won't know how many came over yesterday and voted, but we know that they did, to some degree at least. We have to stop that practice. You know, parties should be able to choose their own nominees and then go up against each other. Having them mess with our ones just to make more moderate Republicans win, it's not a practice that we should be allowing, and we need to make a stop to that. And, you know, with a conservative in as Speaker, we'll have a chance to do that.
Completely agree. We're talking to Shannon Byrne, Strongsville GOP and State Central Committee. You said there were two other races that had you super excited, other results last night.
Well, one is, you just mentioned, State Central Committee. While there was a lot of organized effort by the establishment to try to fight back and take out some of our members of the conservative caucus in the State Central Committee, proud to be able to say that we actually grew our ranks last night. Still not sure exactly. Believe it or not, Ohio doesn't have great we have to go each individual county, but we're collecting all of that. But I know for sure we protected our own and we're able to grow our ranks. So that's a great thing for Ohio to have an independent Republican Party, one that doesn't put its thumb on the scale in primaries and has a structure that will make sure we have ethical spending and things like ORA never happens again. Having our conservative caucus there is critical. So that's an exciting thing, and I know we've talked about it many times in the past, and up until recently, when the State Central Committee censured the Blue 22 and really started this entire conversation in a significant way, State Central Committee wasn't even a topic, and now I think that there's very obvious why it's important for us to have good conservatives running the party as well. That was a huge win for us last night.
Completely agree. Completely agree. Any other final notes of analysis yesterday and then the path forward?
Well, the other thing was is that, Bob, you and I have talked about it before. We had a school levy in Strongsville.
Oh, yes.
And, yeah, we, you know, just a recap, $71 million cash on hand for the city, $9 million surplus last year. They collected this levy for 4 years and did not spend $1 of it. All $37 million went right into the bank at 2% interest. And the voters of Strongsville, even though we were outspent 5 or 6 to 1, voters of Strongsville saw fit to, again, vote down for the second time this levy. Now the question will be is whether our school board members will listen to voters and come back with a smaller levy, or instead do the unthinkable and put it up a third time to get voted down a third time. So we'll see that, but really happy that the voters understood the issues and voted down this levy, because it wasn't one that was necessary at all. Now, obviously, when you have that much cash in the bank, there's no reason to keep adding to it.
Yeah, it does make no sense.
That was a fun one.
Yeah, it really makes no sense whatsoever. And I agree with you. If they're going to come back for another one, it better be about half as much. So, I mean, I think that's what you're calling for, right? Half?
That's right. We're trying to be reasonable here, right? They have a $10 million levy. We don't say cut it out completely, although obviously they could afford it for years. They could afford that. But we say come back with half and come back with a $5 million levy, and we'll support it and move forward with that.
I think that sounds reasonable, and it sounds fair. Shannon Burns, everybody is all taking stock of where we are now after the important primary yesterday. By the way, turnout, any thoughts on what the actual turnout was? I don't know what percentage of Republican voters came out.
Yeah, so it's tough to tell right now what the Republican turnout was just yet, but it was low, expected to be low with Nikki Haley dropping out. We all expected lower turnout. I think it's likely, and this is just my guess because none of us have really been able to evaluate in any significant way. I'm guessing that the I-75 corridor did turn out, and that's one of the reasons why Bernie did so well, is because those Trump voters came out and voted for Bernie. And up here in Cuyahoga County had fairly low. Strongsville actually had pretty high turnout compared to everyone else, but fairly low in the Cleveland area. They're somewhere in the 20% range. I don't know the final numbers and how it turned out, but fairly low overall turnout. Now, what Republican versus Democrat, we'll find that out here in the next 3 weeks.
We will indeed. Shannon Burns, thank you for the analysis. I appreciate it. It was a great night in a lot of places. Not all of the results that we wanted, or that I wanted, I should say, but enough of them to make me feel very good about the direction as we head toward the Super Bowl of Survival, which is exactly what I'm going to call November. It's a Super Bowl for the survival of the country, and Ohio has to do a big, big part in that. Yesterday was a good step toward it. So we appreciate your leadership and obviously your analysis. Thank you, Shannon.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate everything you're doing, and what great night. Looking forward to November as well.
All right. There you go. Shannon Burns laying it out for us, I should say. So I wanted to get analysis from a couple of people that I enjoy talking to and that I trust. We got them. One was Jack Windsor. The other was Shannon Burns there. Now, the rest of it is yours and mine. Let's do this together. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. We can talk about last night's results. We can talk about Bernie, talk about what it's going to take to take down Sherrod Brown, the way Bernie was able to take down Matt Dolan and Frank LaRose in this race. Any of the other results that you saw that you want to speak on, certainly we'll take those calls too. 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer.
The Answer.
All right. Thank you so much for sticking with us this morning as we kind of do a little bit of reaction and analyzing the Ohio primary yesterday, the GOP primary race. Bernie Moreno is the winner of the primary. He'll take on Sherrod Brown. Everybody seems to be very enthusiastic that he can beat Sherrod Brown. And I think a lot of that enthusiasm is coming from the moment. Just happened last night. We're less than 12 hours, well, a little over 12 hours, I guess, now, since we found out that Bernie Moreno was going to win and did win and won going away. Won by, what, 12, 14 points, something like that. So everybody's feeling high on the moment. But the moment will fade tomorrow. It'll fade even more next week. It'll fade even more next month. We have a long, long time between now and then. Talking about November. And Sherrod Brown is going to have a war chest, does have a war chest. I'm told it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $65 million. that is going to allow him to unleash an attack campaign on Bernie Moreno, not just him, but the DNC and the Democratic Senatorial Committee. They're going to unleash an attack on Bernie Moreno that is going to make what Dolan and LaRose just tried to do to him look like, you know, romper room. And they came at, this is why this matters to me a lot. They came at Bernie Moreno much, much, much harder than they came at one another, talking about Dolan and LaRose. And I'm not blaming them. It's campaign strategy. They felt like he was the bigger threat, so they did what they did, and it's fine. Not complaining. But the point is, they came at Bernie Moreno with everything. They took his quotes about DACA kids when Obama was president and finding a pathway to residency for them, which people on both sides of the aisle, many people felt like was appropriate, not pathway to citizenship. And they ran ads for the last 3 months saying that he called for a path to citizenship. It was dishonest. It was deceptive. It was Democrat. Those things always go together, by the way. Those four D's. Dishonest, deceptive, degenerate Democrats. But they came at him with all of that stuff. They came at him suggesting that he's not a strong Second Amendment supporter because of the joking conversation he had with somebody about 100 rounds for a weapon. Talked about his stance on abortion, saying he's not fully pro-life. I mean, there are so many things that they tried to do to misrepresent who Bernie Moreno is that it was really, really, to me, a shock that he won by double digits. I thought he'd win by no more than 4 points if he did win. I thought Matt Dolan could win by 3 or 4 points. I didn't think, particularly in the last month and a half as he started to trail off in the polling, I didn't feel like Frank LaRose had much of a chance to win at all. But I thought either Bernie by 3 or 4 or Matt Dolan by 3 or 4, to be honest with you, the way things had been going. So the fact that Bernie won by plus, 12, 13, 14 points is pretty astounding and pretty shocking. But if you think that he's going to be able to overcome the kind of money that Sherrod Brown has, the way that he overcame the ad buys largely by Dolan, who pumped $10 million into negative advertising against Moreno in the last 6 weeks of the campaign, $10 million. But if you think Bernie's going to be able to overcome the $65 million or more that Sherrod Brown and his team on the Democrat side is going to throw at him, as easily, you better recognize that this is not the same thing. That's not to say he can't or he won't, but don't think that it's going to be, well, he did it this time, he'll do it the next time, because this was only among Republican voters. Democrat voters are different, and apparently so are independent voters in the state of Ohio. How do I know? Simple. Sherrod Brown's still in D.C. Sherrod Brown has been in D.C. for three terms. This would be his fourth term. That's 18 years on his way to 24. Excuse me. And Sherrod Brown has nothing to show for that, yet he's still there. Ohio independents keep electing him. It's not Ohio Democrats, certainly not Ohio Republicans crossing over, but it is Ohio independents who have made the decision. So my question to you is, if you're optimistic right now, and you should be, but again, understand that we're optimistic because of the moment. It was just last night that a guy truly advocating for conservative America First values won against a kind of a rhino slash old guard Republican establishment party in this state. The fact that an America First guy won is a big deal. It is worthy of celebration. It is worthy of optimism and excitement and enthusiasm and confidence that you're going to win in November. But I want you to understand that that's the heat of the moment. That's the passion or the excitement of the moment. You know, you're still basking in the glow of victory. There's going to be a lot tougher road to get this done against Sherrod Brown. Bernie Moreno's going to have to take independents, which have gone overwhelmingly for Sherrod Brown in all of these previous races. It's not going to be easy. And there will be an attack campaign, like I said, that makes what we just witnessed with the primary voters and the primary opponents, I should say, look tame by comparison. So there's a long time between now and then. Are you confident Bernie Moreno is going to beat Sherrod Brown? How do you feel about the result yesterday? 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. Now, on the same path over the course of the rest of March, in April and May and June and July and August and September and October, before we get a chance to save this country, the same number of months are what we have left to find a way to rally support for Donald J. Trump. So I decided last night as I sat in front of my computer watching election returns come in, I got a little bored and I clicked on the NCAA March Madness bracket. All right. We all see it. Maybe you fill one out. I used to fill them out all the time when I used to watch college basketball a lot more closely than I do now. It's tougher now, by the way, because of all of the one-and-dones. You know, I used to know, Ohio State has, three starters coming back who are juniors and, a senior All-American and two great incoming freshmen. I used to be able to do that because the rosters didn't change over as much. But now, if you have any kind of success as a first-year player, you're on your way to the NBA. So it's just a constant turnover. I don't watch it as much anymore. But I do know that March Madness starts tomorrow. With the first round of the NCAAs, and I saw the bracket, and it inspired me in a weird kind of way to do what I did. So as I sat there and watched the returns coming in, I took out, I opened up Microsoft Excel and got my little grid together, and I made a little grid of a bracket, 16-team bracket that has nothing to do with basketball. I put a little title at the top of the page, and I called it Biden's Bracket Buster. And I'm trying to find creative ways to let people know the danger we are in if we do not get rid of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and the radical leftists in the Democrat Party and restore some order to the country, order to the economy, order to foreign policy, order to our border. If we didn't do something by getting it to get Donald Trump back in. So I wanted to do something that'll get attention. So I made a bracket. And I put this bracket, Biden's Bracket Buster, I'm calling it, on my social media pages. It's on my Facebook page right now at Always Right Radio. It's on my Twitter page right now at France Rants, F-R-A-N-T-Z, R-A-N-T-Z. I will put it on my Truth Social page here very shortly as well. I'll put it everywhere I can think of. To show people what we're talking about here. Are you able to take, I had to pare this list down to make it fit in a 16-team bracket. I could have put, I could have put probably a 32-team bracket, meaning 32 different lines, and face off against one another kind of NIT style. But I just stopped with the top 16. And I chose 16 of the biggest issues facing this country due to Joe Biden's policies. The ineptitude, the corruption, the selling out of America. All of the things that we know that the Biden administration has been complicit in, right? So I put them down. And I said, I wonder if people could find a way to choose which of these crises in the United States right now put forth by Joe Biden and his administration and this horrific regime, which would be the worst. And so I set it up in a series of 16 teams, like I said, or 16 issues, and I seeded them 1 through 16 like you do in an NCAA basketball bracket. So 1 against 16, 2 against 15, and on down the line. And I put it together, and I put it on those social media pages, and I'm asking you to conduct a little experiment with me here. Between now and Monday, my next show, so that means you got all day, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I want you to find the time to print this off of one of my social media pages, if you follow me there. Print this, fill it out, fight with yourself and decide which is which, and then take a picture of it and then post it back for me in the comment section of the social media page that you use. I will then go and total up all of the first round selections, and we will announce the winners on Monday of the first round, and then we'll go into the second round, third round, and so forth, kind of the way the tournament will, but we'll do it all within 1 week. So the description is as reads. It's time for March Madness. Of course, if you're Joe Biden, it's that way every month, because he is. He's mad every month, isn't he? Let's see if you're as confused as our president. Fill out your Biden bracket to determine which Biden crisis that Let's Go Brandon has created is the number one issue facing our republic as we head toward the national championship election in November. We'll total up the votes by each bracket and announce the results on WHK AM 1420, the answer after this weekend's action. So I want to read this for you. And I sent it to some people last night. In addition to posting it, I texted it to some friends last night. And I got some instant responses, including people saying, this is impossible. How are we supposed to decide which of these is worse than the others? My friend, the politically incorrect mechanic, Charlie, you know, literally yelled at me because now he's finding himself fighting with himself over this. He literally said, this is going to be tough. I've got to argue with enough people every day. Now I have to have an argument with myself. And I said, yep, because I want us to see the depth of the problems. I want us to explore how bad these are by comparing them to one another. Yes, that's exactly what I want you to do. He hit me again later and said, what are you doing? I'm kicking my own ass over here. I get it. I got a response from Kersenow this morning. Kersenow's a little bit more withdrawal. Sorry, I'm still fighting off this cough. Kersenow is a little bit more laid back in his response, but he said, inspired. Lots of tough choices here. And yes, there are, Pete. That's exactly the point. I want people to try to figure this out. And in doing so, you'll have to kind of plumb the depths of the problem, each one of them. If you follow the media, do you know we have a problem at the border? Yeah. Is it as bad as our problem with our inflated gas prices? I don't know. Are our gas prices as deep as the problem of woke schools? I don't know. Are woke schools as deep of a problem as the massive expansion of abortion in states across the country now since we got rid of Roe versus Wade? I don't know. Is the abortion battle as expansive and as important to you as the battle for medical freedom and forced vaccinations? I don't know. Is DEI as important to you or worse of a threat to this country as the ongoing rising violent crime that is not being stopped by the Biden administration and its Soros acolyte prosecutors and judges? You see what I'm saying here? If you watch or pay attention to the media, you hear these things, but you probably gloss over them because why would you not? You don't have time to do what I do for a living and dig inside of this stuff deep for hours every day. But that's what I'm asking you to do here, is to think about it more deeply. So the Biden bracket that I put together is seeded 1 through 16 as an NCAA tournament bracket is. And I'm going to give you the seeds right now, and then I'll tell you what the matchups are and how you can, again, make your choices. I seeded them thusly. And by the way, much of the seeding was just completely gut instinct and just almost, I don't want to say without thought, because I put thought into it to pick them. But the seeding was almost just like, my gosh, it's hard to pick one of these over another to see which is the worst. So some of these can be interchangeable if you feel that way, but you have to fill out the bracket the way the bracket is listed. So here is my seeding of 1 through 16 of the current crises created by Let's Go Brandon that the American people are. Okay, yeah, fire that up, Josh. Josh says he's got some inspiration music for us. All right, we'll take it. Oh, there you go. The college basketball music. All right, we'll take it. Top seed in this Biden bracket buster that I put together is border security. And you can use that to mean whatever you want it to mean. Border security, given the 10 million or so people that have come across in 3 years of Joe Biden. Seeded number two on my bracket is gas prices because of the strain that it puts on everybody's budget. Seeded number three is grocery costs because of the same reason as gas prices. You get half as much in your basket every week and you pay twice as much. That's just Bidenomics. Seated number four is abortion. It is a massive, massive issue in this country, particularly state by state now that it was kicked to the states. And every state that has had an abortion bill put on the ballot or put on as a constitutional amendment, abortion rights are winning. Babies are losing. Seated number five is, where did I find it? Medical freedom. And this, of course, is your freedom to keep your job without having to take a government experimental shot in your arm or multiple shots. Because do not think that this is over, not by a long shot. No pun intended. Seated number six, woke schools. And you can take that to mean everything from indoctrination into things like CRT and social-emotional learning to the transing of your kids without parental knowledge to the books on the library shelves with pornography, pornographic images and descriptions. That's woke school seated number six. Seated number seven, DEI. What does DEI mean in the corporate world? What does it mean in the academic world? What does it mean to you? What does it mean about public safety? DEI, when it comes to government leadership, is one thing. When it comes to doctors and surgeons and pilots, it means something else. Seated eighth in our Biden bracket buster is Ukraine funding. This is an ongoing battle. We've already spent about $130 billion on Ukraine's battle back against Putin and Russia. Biden wants to send more. A lot of Republicans want to send more. Another $60 billion on the line now. That'll put it up over $200 billion. When does that end? Seated number nine, because it's similar in the terms of foreign policy in a war, the Israel-Hamas conflict. Some want a ceasefire. Biden is trying to flip, and Chuck Schumer trying to flip Israel on its head by ousting its leader, Benjamin Netanyahu, so that he can have a favorable look from Arab-American voters here in the United States. Seated 10th, rising crime. You see it on videos, on the nightly news. You see it online, everywhere. Massive numbers of assaults of innocent people. Massive numbers of snatch and grabs or smash and grabs on stores, forcing businesses to close. Nobody being held to account. Cash-free bail. Slaps on the wrist. No jail time. That's number 10. Seated 11th, lawfare versus Donald J. Trump. This one probably deserves a higher seed. But they're trying to stop you from having a chance to stop some of this with the candidate of your choice by trying to lock him up for the same document scandal that Joe Biden was involved in, but Joe Biden gets to skate on with BS charges of inciting insurrections, charges of overvaluing property, charges of hush money, and all of the other nonsense. They're using 90-some felony charges to try to take out Donald Trump before we even get to November. Seated 12th, EV mandates. Are you at this time next year or the year after, if Joe Biden wins, going to be able to buy a gas-powered vehicle? Or are you going to have to spend more on an electric vehicle because that is what Joe Biden is mandating? That 50 to 60% of the new vehicles sold in this country by 2030 must be electric vehicles, playing right into the hands of China. 13th seed, the flood of fentanyl into this country. Hundreds of thousands of Americans are dying every year because of fentanyl. And that is a direct impact of one of the other seeds, by the way, border security. But it's not just that. It is still a problem within our own borders as well. Seated 14th, stagnant wages. With the increase in inflation, wages would have to increase by a much, much larger number just to keep pace, just to be able to meet our monthly obligations. Wages are not going up, no matter how many times the Biden administration wants to tell you that they are. Certainly not enough to keep pace with inflation. Seated number 15 on the Biden bracket buster, mortgage rates. You've been trying to buy a home? 5 years ago, you could have bought a home and gotten a 3.9 rate, maybe even a 2.9 rate if you've got decent credit. Certainly you could get yourself a 4.9 rate. Now, the average mortgage rate is around 7.5% to 8%. It's keeping people away from the American dream, all because they've had to raise the rates because of Bidenomics inflation. And seated number 16, $34 trillion in national debt. And the Democrats, all they want to do is keep on spending. Ukraine spending, pet projects. I mean, we're talking about a budget that is just filled with so much crap and so much pork. That $34 trillion is never going to be touched. By the time Joe Biden is done with it, it'll be pushing up toward 50. It is insane. So there you have it. That's the Biden bracket buster that I put together as I waited for the returns to roll in the primaries last night. I've posted this bracket on Facebook at Always Right Radio. You can find that there. Follow me while you're there. But print it. I've posted it at Twitter, on my Twitter page, which is France Rants. Take it, grab it, and print it. Then fill it out. Then take a picture of that bracket that you filled out and upload that picture to the comment section on the place where you found it. I will then take all of them over the weekend and I will add up all of the victories, you know, the predictions, I should say, and then give the results on Monday's broadcast. I'll put it on my Truth Social page as well, which is Always Right WHK. The way it comes down, by the way, the first round matchups, it goes 1 versus 16, 2 versus 15, 3 versus 14, and so on and so forth. Your first round matchups are top seed border security against 16 seed national debt. Second seed gas prices against 15 seed mortgage rates. Third seed grocery costs against 14 seed stagnant wages. Fourth seed abortion versus 13 seed flood of fentanyl. Fifth seed, medical freedom against 12th seed EV mandates. Sixth seed, woke schools against 11th seed, lawfare versus Trump. Seventh seed, DEI versus 10th seed, rising crime. And then the 8-9 matchup, eighth seed, Ukraine funding. Ninth seed, Israel-Hamas conflict. Which of those in each head-to-head battle is more concerning and more alarming and more of an emergency to you? Then when you get the winners of each of those, then you square off and say which one is the next and so forth until we get to the number one issue, the national championship issue, if you will, of a crisis brought to us by the Let's Go Brandon administration. So thank you for indulging me in this. If you want to, like I said, participate, please print it, fill it out, snap a pic of it, and upload it back to the comment section of the place where you found it. I will give you those results when we get them. All right, 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. The third hour is open for your phone calls. We'll take whatever you want about the primaries yesterday, about this bracket situation. And by the way, if you've got some discussion points on this to help me figure out, I haven't even filled out my own bracket yet. All I've done is put the matchups together. But if you want to talk about it, we can. 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. It's Always Right Radio.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, hour number three is underway now on this Wednesday, it is 9 minutes after 11 o'clock. It's the 20th morning of the third month in the year of our Lord, 2024. Phone lines are open. We're going to kind of do a free-for-all, something of that sort for this hour. Because I want to give you a chance to respond yesterday to the results of the primary. If you want to get into anything else, if you want to talk about the Biden bracket buster that I put together, I would like to do it. I went ahead, by the way, and made my first attempt. And when I say that, I reserve the right to change my picks here before we start to get results in from other people, because we all do that, right? If you ever filled out an NCAA bracket, you'll fill it out and you'll pick, you know, Ohio State over Georgetown or whatever. And then later on, you change your mind and say, no, I think that's going to be an upset. And you'll flip it. Or I just pick two teams. So my first attempt I have completed. And I just uploaded it to my Facebook page. And I'm going to upload it to my Twitter page as well. And I'll tell you what I have, what I've done, just because it's here, and hopefully to inspire you to complete it yourself. In the 116 matchup, Border Security versus National Debt, I went with Border Security to move to the second round. In the 215, gas prices versus mortgage rates, I went with gas prices. So it's no surprise there. It's 1 and 2. In the 710 matchup, DEI versus rising crime, I went with DEI. I don't want to tell you my argument because I don't want to influence yours. We'll do that together, I suppose. In the 8, so in other words, in my second round, I would have DEI facing off against the gas prices. In the 8-9 matchup at the top of the bracket, I have, that's Ukraine funding versus Israel and Hamas. I went with Israel-Hamas being a more important crisis. So border security and Israel-Hamas would be facing off against one another in round 2. In the 5-12 matchup, medical freedom versus EV mandates, I went with the 5th seed, medical freedom. In the 4-13 matchup, abortion versus flood of fentanyl, I went with abortion. So a second-round matchup there, if it holds, would be medical freedom versus abortion. In the 6-11 matchup, woke schools versus lawfare against Trump, that's the 11 seed. I went with the 11 seed, the upset. I went with lawfare. Again, I won't give you reasons why now because I don't want to influence your votes or your own brackets. And then in the 3-14 matchup, grocery costs versus stagnant wages, I went with grocery costs. So in the second round matchup on that part of the bracket, it would be lawfare versus your grocery costs. So that's the way it works. That's just my first run at it. I may change that. I don't know. But I put that on Facebook, and I will put it on Twitter as well so that people can make up their own minds, and we'll have that discussion. 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. Jim is in West Park. Hey, Jim, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Yes, Bob. You didn't even mention the two that I thought were the most important. Election fraud.
Oh.
Now,
In
the Invisible Treason in America by McInerney, he explains how all this theft is going on. China's been running our election since 2005 with this Hammer scorecard. It was a supercomputer, and they can cheat and steal an election. This book was held up for 2 years. And if you haven't had a chance to read it, you really should talk about it more. The other one is Rising China Problem in America with Cyber Warfare. Okay? Now,
Hey, Jim, when I was putting this together last night, just poking around the different issues, I originally had China in two or three different places, but I couldn't settle on one because I don't know if I'm more concerned with the cyber warfare or the Chinese purchase of thousands of acres of U.S. farmland near military installations, or the 4,000% increase in Chinese nationals, all military-age males that have come across our border in the last 3 years. So I couldn't figure out what to do. I didn't want to just write China on one of the lines because there are so many different elements of it.
But without fair elections, none of the other stuff matters to me. Now, with this election fraud equipment that they got, China's got the codes to it, and they can do whatever they want. Matter of fact, they have been choosing our Pope and bishops and cardinals for decades, along with our people in Washington. So that's all I got. I just thought I'd throw that out there to you.
Okay, you're not wrong. Yeah, you're not wrong, my friend, and thank you for the call, Jim, about having those things on there. Like I said, I could probably do a broader bracket, or do like a 32-team bracket, and have plenty of room for all of those things. And I don't know, maybe if I get bored today, which I won't be because I've got to interview Dennis Prager today, which is all kind of cool. I'll tell you about that in a second. Maybe I'll throw another bracket of 16 up there, and I'll put some multitude of the China problems as well as election interference or election fraud, depending on how you want to look at it. Because, you know, there are other things. I was just, like I said, I kind of did this on the fly last night as I waited for election results to come in. I'm just not, you know, 1,000% certain if all of the top 16 are there. Maybe we should do another 16 and do a round of 32 in NIT-style tournament. But if you have thoughts on it again, and thank you, Jim, you just offered some very good points. I have not read that book about Hammer Scorecard. I have not. I probably should. But you know, because you do raise some very, very good points, but I can't, so I can't comment on them. I haven't, I should say, so I can't comment on it at the moment. 216-901-0945, TJ in Cleveland. Hi, TJ.
Yeah, hi, Bob. You know, first I want to wish a happy birthday to my good buddy Jim from West Park. It's his birthday today.
Oh, well, happy birthday, Jim. I didn't know that. Very good.
Yeah. You know, two things. One, you know, I wonder how much changing the name of the Cleveland Indians came into play with Dolan getting stomped, because I know that made a difference with me. I thought, if this guy's going to give in to the woke left on something like that, what's to stop him from giving in to the woke left if he got to Washington? And the other
well,
point,
I know
I like,
for a fact that it was a factor in his loss the first time around when he ran for the Senate seat that J.D. Vance eventually got, the one to replace Portman. I know for a fact that had a huge impact. Because I interviewed him twice, and we talked about that a lot. And I know it bothered him, and I know it hurt him, and I know it was weird, and I still don't know that Dennis Prager did this on purpose. But at the Medina County Lincoln Day Dinner a couple of weeks back, Dennis Prager gave the keynote speech. And the first 20 minutes of the speech, he was ripping the Cleveland baseball owners for changing the name of Indians to Guardians, and then also talking about it from the Washington Redskins to the Commanders side of things as well. And I know Matt Dolan had to be sitting there cringing over that, because, you know, he gets blamed for that. I mean, the reality is the Dolan family owns the Indians, and they, as a collective unit, I suppose, make these decisions. But it's his brother Paul that runs it. You know, Matt Dolan does not make the decisions with respect to that. The Dolan family as a group is responsible. And I know that chafes him that he gets all of the blame for that. But I know for a fact that it definitely impacted his first run. And I would not be surprised if people were torn between him and Bernie Moreno or Frank LaRose if it hurt him this time, too. I just don't have any proof of it. But I know it hurt him the first time around.
And, you know, in your bracket, you can't leave Afghanistan out. Especially now, you know, what they're doing, the hearings there. I don't know if you watched any of them. The disaster the Biden administration did with that pullout, that disgraceful pullout of Afghanistan. And we're still paying for it today with the loss of that air base, the equipment we left behind. And we're going to pay for that mistake for a long time.
Yeah, you know, that's another one that could be in there. And the only thing I would say, just first blush reaction to that, though, is most of the things that I described are hitting people on a daily basis, you know, in terms of, even if you talk about Ukraine, because it's our money that's coming out of our checks and our tax dollars being spent, we're going to be forced to take the shots. We're going to be forced to get the EVs. We're the ones who are impacted directly by all of these ongoing things that Biden has essentially set up. Afghanistan was a horrific thing that already happened in terms of the terrible pullout and the leaving behind of all of the equipment and so forth. But how that impacts Americans day to day might be a tougher question.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that really got me mad. When that Gold Star father called him out on it, you know, during the State of the Union, then they arrested the man. And then I found out later, not only did his son was a victim of that pullout, his other son committed suicide at the gravesite of his brother. And they arrest this man, and you think Biden would have enough compassion to say, hey, release this, at least release this man. No, they'll double down on it.
Well, no, you must have missed my open today. At the beginning of the show, I ran through some of our important headlines, and it was just announced yesterday the Attorney General in Washington, D.C., Brian Schwab, has dropped all charges against that Gold Star father.
Well, that's good. I mean, yes. That's good. But, I mean, yeah. Biden should have come out personally, you know, and said something about
100%
that.
100% agree. But he couldn't, though, because he couldn't. Because then he would be admitting the reality that he got those 13 troops killed. He got them killed, and he left countless numbers of Americans and American allies you know, assets who were working with us, Afghanis who are hiding and probably now all have been caught and are being tortured for daring to, you know, to conspire with and work with the Americans, you know, by the Taliban. The Taliban are holding them all accountable for it. And he abandoned all of those people. So if Joe Biden spoke up and said, I understand the pain of you know, this, this Gold Star father, he would essentially be admitting that what he did was get that, that man's son killed.
Yeah, and let's not forget, Bob, not just the 13, but the three dozen that were horribly injured. You know, we just talk about the dead, but what about them that going to go through the rest of their life disabled and stuff because of this potato in chief, you know, in Washington?
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with you. I agree with you. It's, you know, you're not wrong about it. It's just, like I said, it's tough to include all of those things. And typically speaking, you know, even in mass you know, mass shootings, for example, we talk about the number dead, not the number of people who are fighting for their lives who are critically wounded and in hospitals and maybe lost a leg or those kinds of things. It just kind of goes by the wayside when you do talk about a, you know, a pretty high death toll. So that's probably, that's what's going on there too. But you're right. We need to pay attention to those too. TJ, thanks for the call. Appreciate you. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Chuck. I almost went to Charlie or Carol, but I guess Chuck is next in Cleveland. Chuck, go ahead.
Okay. Good morning, Bob. I already figured out the bracket.
Let's hear it.
And it's the border, it's my last two, the border and two tiers of government.
What two tiers of government wasn't on the list. Two tiers of government wasn't on the list.
Oh, it is. It's the Trump thing.
Okay, lawfare, the one where I wrote lawfare versus Trump.
Yeah, it's okay. A two-tier of government.
So your final two, your final matchup is border security against what they're doing to Trump.
Two tiers of government. The Democrats can do it and get away with it, and Republicans mm-hmm. do it and they prosecute them. That's a two-tier
right.
of government, and they're doing the same thing to Trump. As far as Biden's concerned, mm-hmm. I'm a veteran. As far as what Biden did, it's like 1,000 times worse than Trump, and Trump really hasn't done anything illegal.
Well, you're right. I spent a great deal of time on that, and thank you for the call, Chuck. A great deal of time after what's his name, Robert Hur gave his testimony. And we talked about, you know, all the reasons why he didn't charge Biden, but then Trump, of course, is being charged by Jack Smith. You're right. Trump didn't break the law because he had the presidential authority to declassify the documents that he took. Joe Biden, as a senator, had no such authority when he took documents. Joe Biden, as a vice president, had no such authority to take what he took and to declassify. He is the only one of the two candidates for president now between Biden and Trump that broke the law. And he's facing no charges. Trump is facing 40 of them. It makes no sense. You're right. It is two-tiered system of justice, but I'm still going to lump that in as lawfare because he's being hit with charges for a variety of things, none of which have ever been brought against anybody else, much less a candidate for president or a past president. But he's being hit with all of these things because it's the only way they think they can stop him from being on the ballot in the first place. So that's why it's kind of just generally collectively referred to as lawfare, using the courts to try to take out a presidential candidate. Thank you, my friend. Let's do Charlie in Brownhelm Township. Hi, Charlie. Go ahead.
Hey, Bob. Thank you for taking the call. I was with the Bernie Marino group yesterday. I was very, very happy. Everybody was so happy. And I'm very encouraged by what happened. Regarding your list, I think number one has to be the threat of a second stolen election. If we have a second stolen election, this country's done. We would descend into a revolution, and that has to be the top seat if it's still a second one. One last thing. I talked to Dolan to his face the other last week, and I said the Indians change the name change is going to hurt you. It's already hurting you. I told him Donald Trump wants to have the Indians' name changed back. He looked at me, he goes, I haven't heard that yet. And I go, you know, and I even brought up that Dennis Prager brought up that the Indians should have never changed. There was no pressure to change the name. You guys just did that out of, you know, whole cloth. There was no reason for it. And, you know, Dennis Prager was right. And I even said, you know, a lot of people there were feeling sorry for you, Matt. And he looked at me. He goes, well, I'm working hard, you know, and that's all he said. But,
well, you know, real quick, Charlie, just on that part, okay. Trump did do some ranting about the Indians' name change, which I'm glad that he did. But as far as, you know, Dolan or the Dolan family not having anybody saying they wanted the name change, there was a very, very, very tiny group of people said that were offended by it. And a bunch of, you know, white liberals agreed and said, yeah, we're offended for them. And that's why they buckled and did what they did. All because Major League Baseball said, if you don't listen to that little minority of a group over there, as opposed to the massive majority of Indians fans, we're not giving you the All-Star game. And they wanted that All-Star game because of the tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars that are generated for them. So that was, you know, the worst part about this to me is they caved in to a tiny, tiny group of protesters over a massive group of people who wanted it to be left the way that it was because of money. So what does that translate to, in my opinion, in the political realm? That means a candidate, if he were to be in the Senate, like Matt Dolan would have been, could potentially listen to a very small group of lobbyists over the massive constituency and the direct will of those people, the you know, the majority of people. He would listen to the small group over the bigger group if they made it worth his time, if they made it worth his effort, if the price was right, because that's what the Indians did for money. They blew off the legions of fans that wanted the name Indians to stay in exchange for the tiny minority of people who were complaining about it. So to me, one of them directly impacts the other.
Yeah, it probably cost him the election. It just was the wrong thing to do. The word Indian is not a pejorative.
No.
In fact, Dennis Prager said there's American Indians all over the country who took that as a badge of honor.
Oh,
that
totally.
They had a group of, you know, that they could, even if they weren't Cleveland fans, they were Indians fans.
Yeah, Dennis talked about that at that Lincoln Day dinner in Medina County. He talked about that there are groups that have been screaming about this. Don't you dare take away that name. It's extraordinarily important to them. They're prideful about it. So that matters. Do you have anything else to say, Charlie?
Yeah, that's my final thing. Dennis Prager's brought it up. But we have political hostages in America. He said he didn't think he'd live long enough to see America have political hostages. The January 6th, Peter Navarro going to prison today, it's just ridiculous. They've turned the prison system, and they're scaring all of us. And Navarro said it, if they can put me in prison, they can put you in prison. And it's scaring people from voting, from being active. We're all afraid because none of us want to go to prison. But Navarro, contempt of Congress, and now he's wearing chains, and he's going into federal prison today. It's so wrong. It's just
well, we'll see about that two-tiered system of justice, because Hunter Biden was also held in contempt of Congress, and guess what? Let's see if he ends up in a prison cell. So we'll see.
Exactly.
Charlie, thank you, my friend. Here's what Charlie is
saying. So Bernie's running against a weak rhino named Matt Dolan. Now, here's what I know about Matt Dolan. I don't know much about him. He's trying to become the next Mitt Romney. I think Mitt Romney is his hero. Matt Dolan once ran for office as a Democrat, and he's easily pushed around by the woke left lunatics who renamed his family's baseball team. Now, think of this. You know, I happen to like baseball. I like sports, and I like tradition. So you have a team called the Cleveland Indians. Indians. They're Indians. Indians. And they took the name Cleveland Indians and made it the Cleveland Guardians. It's almost like they're in charge of a trust fund. They're in charge of a trust fund. The Cleveland Guardians.
That was all part of the rally down in Dayton on Saturday that President Trump had with Bernie Moreno and several others. So, yeah, I was so glad to hear him speak out about that. And again, I'm not saying it cost Matt Dolan his election, but I guarantee it does not help. Quick time out for a bottom of the hour break. We'll come back with more calls after this.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Always Right Radio with Bob Frantz on The Answer.
Okay, it's 11:35. Thanks for being with us. We got one more segment to go. I mentioned in passing a few minutes ago that I'll be talking to Dennis Prager today. It's so much fun. You know, filling in for Dennis is one thing. Listening to Dennis interview people is another thing. Interviewing Dennis himself is an altogether different thing. And today Dennis is going to record with me for my TV show for Strictly Speaking. And if you have not been checking that out yet, we are expanding all over the place. There's so many ways for you to watch the Strictly Speaking television show that I host. And I strongly encourage you to do so. It's free on Roku. It is free on Plex TV. It is free on LG TV. It is free on TCL TV. It is free. What else am I missing here? I feel like I'm missing a couple more. I know that I am, as a matter of fact. But by all means, find True Blue, which is the streaming television network, I should say, that the program airs on. It's called Strictly Speaking. I interview newsmakers. I interview authors. I interview musicians. I interview politicians. I interview movie stars. I mean, a little bit of everything. It's a very, very deep dive television program that I'm very proud of. And a new episode airs every Tuesday and Thursday in the morning. Around 6:30, 7 o'clock, and then it airs again in the afternoon around 3:30, 4, 4:30. And they all vary because they vary in length in terms of their start times. And then at the same time of day on Monday and the rest of the days, really, we replay those interviews. So there have been some phenomenal ones, and today's guest is going to be Dennis Prager. We'll record that, and it'll be up sometime next week, so I'm really looking forward to that. We're going to talk about PragerU. We're going to talk about Fireside Chats. We're going to talk about his Torah teachings. We're going to talk about what's going on in Israel right now and so much more. So I'm really looking forward to that conversation. All right, back to the phones we go. Carol in Parma, you're on AM 1420, The Answer. Thanks for waiting. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hi, Bob. I wanted to back up a little bit and address the State of the Union address that Biden gave. And I'm surprised that nobody ever caught this. But he was talking about the women's abortion rights and Roe versus Wade. And he says that we're going to... Believe me, he's going to make sure that these women are going to get their abortion rights back again. And he said something, God help us, which I think was blasphemy, because God doesn't want these little children, you know, to have their lives cut short. And actually, I think his speech was actually very pathetic. I think if you watch Pamela Harris, it seemed like she was a mother with the kindergartners there back there, and she was holding her breath that he was going to get through everything. I myself, I think it was pathetic. I think it's a disgrace that they even put him on TV like that and put him in the public's eye. I don't know what's wrong with his wife that she allows him to do this, but I just think that State of the Union, and when he addressed Roe versus Wade and the abortion rights of women, we're going to succeed, and we're going to back up Roe versus Wade. God help us. God is not going to help them. Yeah. And I'm surprised that nobody ever called in and addressed that.
Well, I'm glad you did, Carol. It was a shameful address from top to bottom, and thank you for the call. I appreciate that very much, dear. It was a shameful address. He screamed at us for over an hour. He insulted us and suggested exactly that, too, that God was somehow on the side of people who want young preborn babies to die. It is shameful. You know how the problem is? In all seriousness, it's the same thing with me filling out this bracket. Putting this thing together last night, there's so much to digest with this guy. You kind of run out of time, and you kind of run out of, you know, one thing will push another one off to the side, and another one will push another off to the side. I mean, really, there are so many other things I could include on this, and so many other things he said in that shameful address that people focused on instead of that one. It doesn't mean it's not important, but I do understand your point. People have not talked about it. Okay, Frank is in Cleveland next. Hi, Frank, go ahead.
Good afternoon. I just want to say that
it's amazing how little sway DeWine and Rob Portman have in this state. They gave full-throated endorsements to Dolan, and even with LaRose trying to play spoiler like for some reason he always does, they couldn't pull it off. I think Portman is a perfect example of the Rhino Republican. Name me one thing Rob Portman stood for, like what a conviction he had about anything, just one, because I can name 10 or 12 for Trump. But name one single conviction Rob Portman had.
Yeah, it's a fair question. He was the definition of milquetoast, center-right, and maybe emphasis more on the center. Very, very similar to Matt Dolan, which is why he got his endorsement. And I think that's why, you know, a true America First Ohio voter said, no, we're not doing that anymore. We're not the party of Romney and Portman anymore. We have to be the party of America First.
Why does LaRose keep, when there's a Rhino versus a conservative, a true conservative that has beliefs, and is going to vote a certain way, why does he keep jumping in? And the only reason DeWine probably became the governor this time around, other than Democrats voting in the primary, is this LaRose just keeps jumping in and messing it up.
Well, you're right about the primary. That's a big, big factor in this. And as far as why he runs for what he runs, I don't know. He's been successful, by the way, in his other elections, his other campaigns. Obviously, he has run for statewide office and won. So he's got a track record there, and maybe he felt like he could really win this thing. But your point, and thank you for the call, Frank, your point about the open primary and the fact that Democrats can cross over, I think that's the exact reason why Mike DeWine is the governor right now. I agree with you. Charlie in Flakewood, the politically incorrect mechanic. Hey, Charlie.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm still still recovering from beating the crap out of myself.
No, it's hard. I started to do it myself, man. It's difficult.
I had to stop because somebody's got to do the work around here. So I was at the Moreno watch turned victory party last night. And I got to tell you, I text Shannon immediately after, and I said after, you know, we were floating this around after the endorsement of Bernie at the Cuyahoga County GOP, but I think it's fair to say that this is the grassroots Republican Party now, and not the old guard establishment. And if it's not completely, it's well on its way to being it. I think that if Democrats were going to cross over, and I got some numbers for you on that, by the way, as far as who voted what yesterday, but I think if Democrats were going to cross over, they were going to support Dolan, not Bernie, no matter what kind of money Schumer put into whatever ad campaign. And thanks for that, Chucky. but you know, as far as votes go, just over a million people voted in the Republican Party, in the Republican primary yesterday, and there were 1.6 million people that voted in total. That means a little over 500,000 Democrats voted in the Democrat party, but there's only 836,000 registered Republicans in the state of Ohio. The rest of that is either it's hard to say who did what, but you have a giant independent base, unaffiliated base in the state. And I think those people broke for Bernie because I think they see what's going on here and they're tired of, you know, socialism in the Senate.
Well, you know what? I think you're right, and I hope you're right. And, Charlie, I wish I had more time to respond to some of what you said, but we are out of time. And we'll talk more about that bracket and you beating yourself up, too, because I really do want to get people's opinion on this next time we chat. So thank you, Charlie. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you to Josh sitting in for Seth today and to Chris sitting in for Marianne and Marcy as well. Thank you, everybody. Be well, be safe, stay free. See you tomorrow.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.